Hello, thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Dr. Larry Birkelhammer. He is author of In Your Own Hands, New Hope for People with Chronic Medical Conditions. If you are among the many millions of Americans living with a serious chronic illness, you know how challenging it can be. While you may do your very best to manage your condition, you still must live with it every day, and it can be all too easy to succumb to feelings of helplessness and hopelessness, especially if medical science has not yet found a safe and effective treatment for your illness and a cure is nowhere in sight. But you don't have to live this way. Using the roadmap Dr. Birkelhammer offers in your own hands, a new hope for people with chronic medical conditions, mindfulness-based practices for mastery and well-being, you can chart your way to well-being despite your condition. By engaging in the mindfulness-based practices presented, all based on sound science, you will learn to take charge of your health, banish unnecessary suffering, and become the master of your own life. The methods you need are now within your reach. And the power to live with greater well-being starting today is in your hands. For more information, you can visit Dr. Birkelhammer's website, which is www.larryberkelhammer.com. And I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Larry to the show. Good day, Larry. Thanks for joining me today.
Well, thanks for having me, Robert. It's good to be here.
Oh, it is my pleasure, and you know, I know so many people who are living with, you know, chronic illness, pain, particularly, that I was really happy to have you on the show, and hopefully give some people some ideas to help alleviate that and maybe shift perspective. So, what I'd like to start with is I usually like to have my guests kind of give a little bit of background of their background, and if you wouldn't mind sharing with listeners a little bit about yours and why it is that chronic illness is kind of a personal story of yours as well.
Yeah. So I was practicing psychotherapy, had a private practice at the time when I was diagnosed with several chronic problems all at once. The most serious one is I have a primary immunodeficiency disorder, but I also have a platelet aggregation defect and a very severe osteoporosis brought on secondarily to a severe malabsorption syndrome and cardiac dysrhythmias, two different forms of arthritis. So I have a number of problems, and I received the diagnoses at a major academic medical center, I was a little disappointed. I was very idealistic. I thought, well, the good thing about getting a diagnosis is then you can get the cure, and little did I know, there aren't any cures. There are very few cures out there for anything, really. Most people don't realize that. And when I discovered that I had these problems that leave me dealing with chronic pain, chronic fatigue, chronic physical disabilities, and also the potential danger of getting sick with something that my immune system can't handle, I began to wonder what I could do. If the doctors don't have a cure, what could I do? Well, it's easy to get information on the basics, things like eating a good nutrient-dense diet, getting enough exercise, getting enough sleep, stress management. Those are the easy things. But I wonder, and I was already doing those things. I had always lived a healthy life. So I began to wonder, well, is there anything else? And so I started doing a lot of research, which the result of which became my book, In Your Own Hands. And in the book and in my class, I also teach a class at College of Marin, which of course is only useful if you happen to live here in the San Francisco Bay Area. Even in my book, I teach the same things, which essentially is talking about the things you can do. So at the top of the list is mindfulness practice. And what mindfulness practice does is it allows you to learn how to see your thought processes. And by seeing your thought processes, you can live a much happier life. So, for example, I often find myself engaging in negative thinking, usually when I'm experiencing some chronic pain problem that's getting worse, just not able to do things that I used to be able to do, I find myself getting depressed. And thanks to decades of mindfulness practice, I can see that the source of my depression is not my pain, is not my fatigue, it's not my disability. The source of my depression is my unhealthy thinking. So, you know, for example, I might have thoughts of that I'm just spiraling down, my body's falling apart, you know, there's no point in living if I'm going to keep getting worse. This is really very negative, unhealthy thinking. So through mindfulness practice, I get to see that these are just thoughts. It's different from reality. The reality is I have no way of knowing. None of us have any way of knowing what the future has in store for us. It may be good, or it may be not good, but we can't know the future. We can only know the present moment. So through mindfulness, I get to see that, okay, I'm feeling depressed because I'm telling myself all kinds of negative story about a possible negative outcome. Mm. And since I don't have a crystal ball, I can step out of that and say, okay, I want to live more presently. I want to live more in this moment rather than filling my head with negative thinking or self-critical thinking or self-judgmental thinking. That stuff isn't good for anyone. And so that's why mindfulness is really foundational to everything else that I teach. Should I go on with the other thing?
Sure. Go ahead. I'm taking notes. So, like a good student here, I'm taking notes, and I'll ask questions in a moment.
Well, that's great, because I have a lot of information to share. One of the things that turned up in my research that is in my book, I have a whole chapter on social connectivity. So I report on a lot of epidemiological studies where they controlled for all possible confounding variables. And one of the things that they found is, in study after study, people who have the most friends, I'm not talking about Facebook friends, I'm talking about friends who are truly there for you, friends who are really there for you in time of need, and friends who will call on you in their time of need, that type of friend. People have the most number of really good, dependable, close friends are people who recover from illness faster. They develop chronic illness much later in life. And across the board, even with cancer, there was one study done with 3,000 breast cancer patients, all of whom were nurses, were registered nurses. Mm. They found that the nurses who had the most friends, who were most connected in community recovered at much better rates from their cancer than the nurses who had the fewest number of friends. And similar studies have been done with other populations. It's not unique to nurses. Across the board, the more friends you have, the healthier you will be. And so that's another big category. Another big category is meaning and purpose. So people who live with chronic pain or chronic medical conditions or life-threatening diseases, if they can find a way to make meaning of the disease or find ways to just... So, for example, a lot of us can no longer do the things we used to do that gave meaning to our lives. At one time, I was involved in competitive skiing. I was a ski racer. I had grown up in New England, and that was just part of my life. I had to give up skiing at a certain point. Got involved in the martial arts. Had to give that up. Got very involved in hiking. And I'm now very limited in the hiking I can do. And there are many people who've been diagnosed with chronic conditions who've had to give up their careers. My career happened to be one where I'm sitting in a chair most of the time, so that wasn't a problem. But people have had to give up careers. Well, giving up a career, you not only lose your livelihood, you lose your identity very often. So... I tell people you have to find some new way of finding meaning and purpose in your life so that every morning when you wake up, you have to have some reason to get out of bed, some reason to go on with your life, something to really look forward to, something that makes you feel good about what you're doing, that your life has value to yourself and to others. So... Those are the three top things: mindfulness, friends and community, and meaning and purpose. But there are other things too. One of them is very tied into the others, which is serving other people. It's also in these studies that I report on in my book. The researchers have found that people who help other people are healthier. So it could be through your profession, but most often the people who get the biggest benefit are people who do volunteer work or some type of altruistic work, people who serve other people, who are doing things on a regular basis that makes life better for others. And those people... it seems to give them a sense of meaning and purpose to be able to make life better for others. They're often doing it in community. If you're doing volunteer work, that's in community. So that serves the first thing I mentioned, which is the making new friends and being in community. And it just, I think we all feel better about ourselves when we're doing things to help other people, even if it's minor things, like just smiling at strangers or opening the door for someone, picking up something they dropped, or letting someone go in front of you in traffic. The little things like that add up. And the more good we do in the world, the better we feel about the world and the better we feel about ourselves. And the better we feel about the world and ourselves, somehow... this sends a message to the immune system, and we tend to be healthier and happier.
Yeah, we know there's that whole mind-body connection. I mean, it's just amazing the impact, and we're really just getting to understand the full scope. And I don't even think we probably touched the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the power of the mind in helping, you know, regulate or alter or even shift our bodily systems.
Yeah, that's right. You know, one of my mentors, I just blanked on Well, his name is Lawrence Lachan, but I was going to tell you something he said, and now it just flew out of my mind. but I do can tell you what some other people have said. Norman Cousins, who has written a number of books, he once said, "What a person does or thinks can affect the kinds of prescriptions written for the body by the brain." In other words, most people don't realize this, but the reason pharmaceuticals work is because we have certain receptors in the brain that are set up for those drugs. Well, you might wonder, well, why would we have receptors in our brain for pharmaceuticals? That doesn't make sense. The pharmaceutical industry didn't put them there. The reason we have these receptors for the pharmaceutical drugs is because we make those drugs. We make drugs for ourselves all the time. We make all the drugs we need. But that's only when we're in perfect health, and most of the time we're not in perfect health. So we need drugs from the pharmaceutical industry. But the reality is we do, in perfect health, make all the drugs we need. So Norman Cousins' statement is very true. What a person does or thinks can affect the kinds of prescriptions written for the body by the brain. So if we're engaging in a lot of negative thinking, we are going to be, our brains are going to be prescribing drugs that create anxiety and depression and that lead to ill health. One of my other, one of my mentors, Gene Okterberg, once said, "No thought, no emotion is without biochemical, electrochemical activity, and that electrical and that activity leaves no cell untouched." So, in other words, you cannot have. In other words, a thought is much more than just a thought. Most of us think of thoughts as just, oh, that's just stuff that goes on in the mind. Well, no, it's much more than that. Every time we have a thought, every time we have a feeling, an emotion, there are biochemical, electrochemical changes in the body that actually affect every single cell in the body. So that's why it's really important to do things, the things that I recommend, things like mindfulness, making new friends, improving your current relationships, improving meaning and purpose, doing whatever. One of the things I didn't get into yet is self-acceptance, and I could talk about that, how to build self-acceptance. But all these things are really important, not only so that we can be happier in life, but the happier we become, the healthier we are likely to become. The immune system functions better when we're happier. And I firmly believe that if I hadn't been doing all this personal work, I would have died years ago, because there was a point about 15 years ago where there was just a lot going wrong with me all at once. And I think if I hadn't been doing all the personal work to improve my state of mind, I think I would have continued to spiral down and probably wouldn't have survived.
Yeah, you know, that's the one thing, you know, first of all, when we're talking about chronic illness, would you kind of maybe explain to the listeners what is meant by chronic?
Well, so if you get, let's say you're cutting vegetables and you cut your finger and you cut it really severely and you go to immediately to the ER and they clean out your finger. They hopefully first inject your finger with an anesthetic agent. Then they clean out your finger and then they stitch it up. That's an acute injury. If you get the flu, and let's say you get the flu, you might be sick as a dog for a week or 10 days, but that's an acute injury. A chronic illness would be something like an arthritis. There are about 120 different forms of arthritis, but they are chronic illnesses. Autoimmune disorders, there are, I don't even know how many, but hundreds of different types of many hundreds, probably in the thousands, of different types of autoimmune diseases. Autoimmune disease is a type of disease where the immune system mistakes part of the body as foreign, and it attacks it and tries to destroy what it thinks is a foreign pathogen, and it destroys part of the body. Those are unfortunately lifelong chronic illnesses. So a chronic illness is very long-term, not necessarily lifelong, because some people do fully recover from chronic illnesses. But by chronic, they probably have it for years, certainly months, if not, and often many, many years.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted for the listeners to kind of get an understanding, you know, of the nature of illness, you know, so to speak. So, well, let's talk about mindfulness, and I want to go back to the beginning here, where we're talking about the idea of recognizing one's thought processes. Now, you know, like you, I have some great negativity training, negative thought processes, some tapes that get played and played that I've, you know, worked on overcoming. So with mindfulness, you know, the idea is kind of to be present and to recognize our thought processes. Is this something, I heard you say mindfulness practice. So it sounds like this is something that one has to work at in order to
It's unfortunate. It would be nice if you could just send away to Amazon, send me some mindfulness. I'll pay anything. Just send me some mindfulness. That would be like going to the gym and hiring someone to work out for you. It won't work. You can hire them to work out, but their muscles are going to be getting bigger, not yours.
Okay.
So it's something we have to practice, and it's a daily practice. And it's unfortunate because I'm like most people. I hate to practice anything. I don't have too much problem, like most people. I don't have a problem practicing eating. That's easy. That's not even a practice. But exercise is a practice. Mindfulness is a practice. Certainly eating healthy food all the time, that's a practice. So there are different ways to practice it. The first way, the most common way, is to sit quietly. You don't have to sit on a cushion or a bench. You can sit in a chair, but you want to be sitting upright. And you want to just tune into the physical sensations of breathing. And as you're just following the physical sensations of your breathing, you're not making the breath happen because we breathe naturally. You don't have to breathe. Breathing just happens on its own. So the idea is just tune into the breathing that's happening anyway and just follow the in-breath and the out-breath, and you just do that. And you do it for a minute, 5 minutes, half hour. There are people who go on retreats for a week, 10 days, a month, 3 months, or longer, and that's what they're doing all day. People who haven't done that might think, what could possibly be more boring than that? The reality is, it's not boring at all, because as you're listening to your breathing, following your breathing, the feeling your abdomen expanding and contracting, something happens. Your mind starts to wander all over the place. And that's normal. That's part of being human. Our minds wander. But through mindfulness practice, you begin to actually see your mind wandering. So I'll be sitting meditating, and I'll suddenly realize that for the last few minutes, I was thinking about something that happened yesterday or somewhere I'm going to be going tomorrow. So when that happens, when I realize that my mind is wandering, I just come back to following the physical sensations of breathing. And the trick is to not beat ourselves up over it. So when I notice my mind is wandering, I just come back. If I notice I'm judging myself, if I notice that, oh, boy, I just allowed my mind to wander for the last 20 minutes, I can't believe what a lousy meditator I am. So if I notice I'm judging, then I just notice I'm judging. So the idea is, you can't do it wrong. You can only do it. If you're practicing mindfulness, you can't do it wrong. Now, if you notice your mind is wandering and you choose to follow that thought pattern, well, then you're no longer practicing mindfulness. Because mindfulness is when you say to yourself, okay, I've been having this thought about this place where this thing that happened yesterday, and this is my special time for meditating. I want to give myself this time. So I'm choosing to come back to following the sensations of breathing. And I'll come back to this thought later when I'm done meditating. So that's basically mindfulness practice in a nutshell. Now, there are things you can do with it. So, for example, when you begin, so like most of us, once we become aware enough, we become aware that we have a lot of negative self-talk. And so let's say I'm having a thought that, I might find myself feeling a little bit depressed. And I look at, oh, I wonder why I'm feeling a little down. And then I realize, oh, I'm feeling down because I'm just a failure this new career I'm doing. I'm just a failure. Well, with mindfulness, I get to see that, oh, I'm just making that story up that I'm a failure. It's not true that I'm a failure. That's my personal judgment that I'm a failure. That's a story I'm telling myself, a very unhealthy, negative story. And we all engage in negative self-talk. And through mindfulness, we get to see that I'm just telling myself a story. And so I am a failure is very unhealthy, whereas I'm telling myself a story that I'm a failure. That's very healthy. So that's mindfulness in a nutshell.
Yeah. Well, you know, it sounds like, you know, the practice, you know, of sitting there and the focus on the breath and the wandering mind, bringing it and then coming back to, it sounds to me that whole process, that by doing that in getting better at kind of keeping focused on breathing, let's say, right, and less mind travel, that, you know, in your day-to-day activities, you know, should you encounter either those negative thoughts or maybe even a negative situation, something, you know, that raises anxiety, anger, or fear, that the ability to shift to mindfulness then would be easier because of that practice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, so let's say I'm sitting in traffic and I'm late for an appointment and I'm sitting there getting more and more anxious by the moment and more angry too. But not only angry, I'm scared, you know, what's going to happen when I finally get there? People are going to be upset. If there's nothing I can do, I mean, I could get on my cell phone and call whoever I'm going to be meeting and say I'm stuck in traffic. That certainly could help. But sometimes that's not enough, and I'm still sitting there in traffic and I'm upset. And so I can tune into all the thoughts I'm having, and I can come to realize that, okay, what can I do in this moment to improve the situation? Well, I can't get rid of all the cars that are clogging the freeway in front of me. So there's nothing I can do there. So what can I do? Well, what I always can do is work with what's going on in my mind. So I can tune into my breathing and calm myself that way. I can watch my thoughts and just actually, it's like watching a funny movie. I can actually be entertained by all of my absurd thoughts that I'm having. Like, you know, I'm having all these thoughts about the negative response I'm going to get when I get there. Or I'm having all these angry thoughts about who's the imbecile who crashed the car up in front that caused all this backup. So I can just be amused by all my thoughts instead of being completely caught up in them, fused with them.
Yeah, that's. I want to mention. I noticed that there was a topic on your website called cognitive fusion. And I want to kind of talk about that later. Let me talk about that later. We're at about halftime right now, though, Larry. I want to take just a quick 2-minute break. Invite anyone if you'd like to call in and ask Dr. Birkelhammer any questions. The number to call in is 619-789-4359, or for those of you who are listening live in the chat room and you would like for me to pose a question to Larry, feel free to type it in there and I'll be sure to pass it on to him. Okay, so then Larry, after break, when we come back, maybe since you mentioned fusion, maybe we can talk about that, and then I do want to go on to those other areas of social connectivity, meaning and purpose and that kind of thing too as well, okay?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay, yeah. Great, okay. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back in just under 2 minutes.
This is Roy Worley at MysticalShift.com. R.P. Sharp has done it again. His new book, It's No Secret, Spirituality Bites, with BITE, B-I-T-E, being an acronym for Bringing Inspiration to Earth, has once again hit a home run. Unlike R.P. Sharp's first book, Joy Potential, which was a uniquely original story containing a message of hope and inspiration for everyone, regardless of where they happen to be on their personal spiritual path. It's No Secret is a compilation of awareness, insights, guidance, and wisdom that can help anyone navigate through their lives on a daily basis. It's No Secret also contains resources and references that enable a person to find expanded information on a variety of issues that affect all of us. Order It's No Secret today. I guarantee it will be a valuable resource for help with whatever your needs are.
Cardamom. Cardamom, once considered one of the world's most precious spices, reserved for holidays, weddings, and other special occasions, is captivating a new generation of admirers. With a hint of clove, the spiciness of ginger, and overtones of vanilla and citron. Cardamom essential oil is good for calming stomach upset, promoting clear breathing and respiratory health, and is a flavorful spice for cooking and baking. This essential oil and many other wellness products are available at our wellness store. There you will find information about retail shopping, how to become a preferred member, saving 20% on purchases, and how to become a wellness advocate and shop at wholesale prices with the added opportunity for you to make money. Make your health and wellness a priority today by visiting www.biteradio.me and clicking on the wellness link.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Dr. Larry Birkelhammer. He is author of In Your Own Hands, New Hope for People with Chronic Medical Conditions. And again, you can find out more about his book and other offerings by visiting his website, which is www.larryberkelhammer.com. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So with that, we're back, Larry.
Okay.
Okay. You know, before we go on to talking about the fusion, I did want to mention on your website, I noticed that people can sign up kind of for a newsletter that you have. Is that correct?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I just wanted to let people know that that's an option for them to go and do, and also maybe get a few first chapters of your book so that they can get a glimpse of it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, if they sign up for the newsletter, I think they get the first 3 chapters of my book free of charge.
Great. Well, that, I just wanted to let everybody know that it's always great to be able to not only get information on a regular basis, but also to really get a glimpse of your book, and then they can go on further. So I just wanted to make sure people knew about that. Okay. Well, you know, you before the break, you kind of mentioned fusion, and as I was reviewing your website, I noticed, you know, the topic of cognitive fusion. And I had never heard of that. So if you wouldn't mind, I mean, it sounds like we do this, but we don't know about it.
Cognitive fusion is what I was talking about earlier, where it's like, so if I say I'm a failure, that's cognitive fusion. Cognitive defusion would be stepping out of that, defusing. So there's something called cognitive defusion, which is the ability to step out of that and see that the statement, I am a failure, is nothing more than a story. But if I'm unable to see that it's a story, if I'm truly caught up in it, then I'm in a state of cognitive fusion. So mindfulness is a great way to practice cognitive defusion. Or another way to say it would be cognitive disentanglement.
Okay. Well, so in this really, I mean, the idea of fusion, is it, you know, that whole idea that story, that negative story, that untrue story that we're telling ourselves would be connected to possibly creating some physical response?
There's no question, you know, as I said earlier, every thought we have affects our physiology.
Okay.
So if we are caught up in negative thinking, then that is going to negatively impact our health. So cognitive fusion is bad for our health. It's not only bad for our health, but it's not conducive to living a happy life or a productive life.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Well, I just wanted to make sure then, you know, that I understood what that was about. Social connectivity. You know, we talked a little bit about how important that is. And when you're talking friends, we're not just talking about Facebook friends. We're talking about friends who can and be there in time of need. Does this kind of go beyond, you know, some people I know are very involved in, you know, in a church of some sort, some kind of support group like that, or even, you know, maybe support groups, you know, of similar nature. Is that the kind of connectivity also that would help with, you know, quicker
response? If it feels supportive, it doesn't matter what it is. It could be virtually any type of organization, formal or informal meetings. The main thing is that you're around people who feel supportive, where you can feel loved, where you can feel a sense of belonging, where you can feel like you are a valued member of that community, a contributing member of that community. So as long as you get those feelings from it, it doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah. Now, with what happens, I've noticed often, what happens a lot of times if people have some kind of chronic illness or, you know, some kind of symptoms that, you know, recur in a chronic manner, quite often there's it seems like a desire to maybe withdraw, you know, from society, you know what I mean, in a way that it's kind of like,
right,
I don't want to be out there, you know, for whatever reason, you know. And many times if it's a physical challenge, you know, a lot of people don't like being in public. I mean, I know of someone who shakes a lot, you know, and I don't think it's Parkinson's related, but there's some kind of physical element, and she just, you know, does not like to go out because, you know, especially in eating or in any kind of social circumstance where people would pay attention to that. So if people have, you know, chronic
challenges. Is it even more difficult to kind of get that social connectivity?
Yeah, it is. But it's even more important for them to do it, despite being uncomfortable about it, because we all need community. We need to be part of the community. We need friends, family. I mean, family, it's a little tricky because you want to be around, especially if you're dealing with chronic illness, you want to be around people who are supportive. And family, you know, can be that way or not, but you want to keep your distance from people who are not supportive. The main thing is you want to be around supportive people where you feel valued and loved and appreciated. That will definitely improve your state of mind, and by improving your state of mind, you improve the odds of being healthier. But one of the things that happens when people develop chronic illness is they get depressed. And so part of being depressed is not wanting to make phone calls to people, not wanting to get together with people, not wanting to leave the house. And that just makes the depression worse. So it's really important to get out there, to reach out to people, and you know, and to be as active as possible. And people who do that are healthier and happier.
Yeah. Now, in addition to connecting with other people, you mentioned a little bit, real briefly before the break, the idea of improving our relationship with ourself. That, you know, to me, it's like that would be the first place you would want to start building up a strong, supportive relationship.
It is. Absolutely. It is so important. When I teach my class at College of Marin, I have I show movie trailers to each week is a different theme. So 1 week is social connectedness. That's the first week. Second week is meaning and purpose. When I get to the week six, which is acceptance, the trailer I show is of the movie Precious. Did you see the movie Precious?
Yeah. Yes, I did. Yes.
So now, in that movie, if you think about that girl, the way she was treated by her mother, it's understandable that she would have such low self-esteem. It's understandable she would have such total lack of self-acceptance. Those of us who grew up in abusive families typically don't think much of ourselves. And I've had to spend a lifetime working very hard to increase my self-acceptance. But the challenge is how to do it. And it's uncomplicated, but very difficult. And the most proven way to improve self-acceptance is to allow ourselves to be with whatever is our current moment experience. So when we have thoughts that we don't want to be having, either from some traumatic event, you know, a memory, or thoughts about ourselves that are derogatory, when we have thoughts that are unpleasant, we want to get rid of those thoughts. When we have feelings, emotions that are unpleasant, one of the most unpleasant emotions is shame. And when we have, when we experience shame, we just want to escape from it. Now, the problem is, there are most people in the world are very good at escaping. I certainly have those skills too. But the problem is, that only leads to more of what we don't want. So if we're feeling shame, then running from the shame, whether it's through distraction like watching TV or eating or drug abuse, I mean, that's why there's such an epidemic of alcohol and drug abuse. Running from what we don't want, running from our unpleasant thoughts and emotions, actually ruins our lives. And anyone who's had an addiction problem of any kind knows that. So the path to self-acceptance is to allow ourselves to fully experience everything that we don't want to experience. So I'm feeling shame. I have to allow myself to just really feel it, to go into it. And that is very challenging because it can feel like death, like we can't survive it. And so it's an enormous challenge, but that is the ticket to self-acceptance. So, you know, it's like if you're experiencing anxiety and you allow yourself to fully experience the anxiety gradually diminishes. If you keep fighting the anxiety, it only gets worse because then you start getting anxious about being anxious. If you're depressed, if you're depressed and you're trying not to be depressed, you'll get more depressed. Whereas if you allow yourself to just feel the sadness and truly experience the sadness, you learn over time that you can survive virtually any emotion, no matter how painful that emotion is. And once you really get it, that you can survive any emotion, any thought process, then you can begin to allow yourself to really own it. And at that point, life starts to get much easier, and you start to live with a high degree of self-acceptance.
Yeah, and in that moment of experiencing depression, mindfulness would help in kind of recognizing the source of that depression?
It does. Yes, it does. Because the practice of mindfulness involves sitting quietly and tuning in to whatever is there. So in the meditation, we tune into the physical sensations of breathing. But the rest of the day, mindfulness involves just tuning in to our current moment-to-moment experience. So if I'm doing the dishes, that means just paying full attention to doing the dishes. If I'm in a conversation with someone and I find myself getting angry or feeling something, then mindfulness means allowing myself to tune into that and feel it. So what mindfulness does when practiced every day is it allows us to tune in. And, you know, so I was saying that if we can allow ourselves to feel our feelings and fully experience our thoughts, then the pain diminishes, the suffering diminishes, and we have more self-acceptance. But the problem is, how do we even know what we're thinking? How do we know what we're feeling? And the way we know is through a daily mindfulness practice.
Okay. All right, that makes sense. One of the things that area that you also mentioned was meaning and purpose, and you know, you I think very accurately described how, you know, many people who have a chronic medical condition can a lot of times feel, you know, a sense of loss of identity or that kind of thing. One of the things I was wondering, quite often, you know, I'll be sitting going to, let's say, out at a restaurant, and for some reason it seems to be senior time, you know, and then I'll be, you know, at a table next to me, it will be a group. And it's like the whole conversation is about their illnesses, you know, and you know, the medications,
yeah.
And you know, and I sit back and, you know, and I understand. I mean, I'm getting older too. I've got them coming, you know, here and coming as well. So, you know, I understand that, you know, that's just a part of life. But, you know, to me it seemed that their whole purpose, you know, or meaning revolved around the illness.
Right.
Did you find that's something that happens and people really need to get outside of that and find a true purpose?
Yeah. You know, for years I facilitated support groups for people with chronic illness, and I won't mention the organization because I didn't like the limitations that they put on me as a facilitator. People would come into the support groups dealing with, and all they wanted to talk about was their aches and pains and their fatigue and all the things they can't do. And it became the groups met once a week, and the groups became pity parties where you're just going in and pitying, engaging in self-pity. And that is not healthy. Now, obviously, we need support. So if we're in pain, physical pain, emotional pain, we need support. We need someone who can listen to us. But if we're getting stuck in just babbling on about our chronic condition, that is very unhealthy. We get stuck in that. And the reality is that if all you think about is what you don't want, you're going to have more of that very thing. If, on the other hand, you put your mind on being with friends you enjoy, finding meaning and purpose, you know, setting goals and working towards achieving those goals, identifying what matters to you in life and living by your personal life values, you know, then you're going to be happier and you're going to be healthier. But people who just sit around, you know, with their peers and talking about all their aches and pains and fatigue and all, or sitting around and talking about, it may not even have to do with chronic illness, but they're sitting around and talking about everything that's not working in their lives. So if you sit around and talk about everything that's not working, you're actually reinforcing the very thing that you don't want. So you don't want to go to the other extreme and just start pretending that everything is working great when in fact it isn't. That's not going to work either, because that's inauthentic. But what you do want to do is find healthy outlets, places where you can go and feel like you're a valued member of a community, where you are a contributing member of a community, where it gives you meaning and purpose, where you can set, or even on your own, forget community, do things where you can set goals, where you can pursue things that matter to you and live by your values, live by what you want rather than what you don't want. The more time you spend thinking about what isn't working, the more you'll have in your life of what isn't working.
Yeah, well, you know, and that was what I was thinking when I listened to those conversations. I thought, well, you know, first of all, I didn't want to be the person listening, you know, to all the aches and pains, you know, because then it made me think about mine. You know, it's like, oh, I don't want to go there. But you know, I thought, you know, I'm sure many of these people have grandkids or golf games or, you know, many other things, you know, to be talked about. And I, you know, I'm kind of aware of the whole idea of trying to pay attention to one's thoughts and words, you know, especially the words that we speak, as far as how they can, you know, impact our reality. And I always thought that was very odd. But okay, well, gosh, we're down to about 6 minutes here, Larry. And the last thing I want to just spend just a few minutes that remain is the area of serving other people, and you know the effect that volunteerism or helping other people, that particular thing, you know, it seems that you know, not going out and kind of becoming a hermit, that was one of those things where, you know, people who have, you know, chronic medical conditions might kind of put by the wayside, you know, and not really go. Because, I mean, if you have a chronic condition, some people, again, you know, one of the last things that they do is want to be around other people, you know, and volunteerism is, you know, I mean, you kind of want to be at your best when you're trying to help someone.
Well, you know, the fact is that you can go into, I have known people who have to really force themselves out of the house to go. They have a volunteer job they go to once a week, and they have to really force themselves out of the house because they don't feel well. But what they've told me is that when they come out of the job a couple of hours later, they feel fantastic. They feel better because they've been helping people, which makes them feel better about themselves. And they just feel better overall, and they look forward to doing more of it. So there's something about serving others. I think we are here to serve other people. And it doesn't have to be formal volunteer work. So, you know, there are a lot of bloggers out there. I've been interviewed on Blog Talk Radio many times by people who are no longer well enough to work, but and they're pretty much confined to the house. But they have Blog Talk Radio programs. And that's something you can do without even leaving the house. And so, for example, if you have a specific disease, especially if it's a rare disease, you can serve a function of helping those people who don't get support anywhere else because there are so few other people out there with that rare disease. But because Blog Talk Radio is an international thing, internet-based, the few people all around the world who happen to have that rare disease can flock to your Blog Talk Radio program and get support, and then the host feels wonderful bringing all these people together. So there are ways that everyone can serve other people, even if you can't even get out of the house.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Larry, this has been a great conversation. We're down to the last few minutes. So I guess, you know, if you wouldn't mind, maybe what is it that you hope that the reader will take away from reading In Your Own Hands?
I think the thing that is the message, the most important message, is that you don't have to be a victim. You don't have to be helpless, hopeless. You can take charge of your life. It doesn't mean you can control the outcome, because none of us have the power to actually control the outcome. But we can take charge and make things happen. We can make conscious choices every day as to how we want to live our lives, given the limitations that we have. And if we do that, then we will live a better quality of life.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you know, I really appreciate your time. This has really been a great discussion, some really good information that we've given listeners, and I'll be sure to put your book on my recommended reading list on my website, because I think it's a very good message for people out there who have chronic medical conditions. So I really want to thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you, Robert. Thanks for having me.
It has been my pleasure. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Dr. Larry Birkelhammer. He is author of In Your Own Hands, New Hope for People with Chronic Medical Conditions, Mindfulness-Based Practices for Mastery and Well-Being. And again, you can find out more about his book as well as getting his free newsletter. Sign up for there, get the first three chapters of his book. All of that is on his website, which is LarryBirkelhammer.com. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again. Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Bite Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.